Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I am Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street, here for another week, joined, as always, by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, pal?
You know, I'm doing well. I had the experience of bombing in a family Easter Zoom chat yesterday, so I had to deal with that. I unmuted my microphone to say a joke, and it totally bombed, and I just muted myself again and let everyone else catch up. So I had that going on.
That's nice.
But other than that,
that's the worst type of bomb is the family bomb.
Oh, you know, it's not a good feeling at all. And also, it's been like today was like pouring rain in New York. I had to get groceries. My umbrella broke. It's been a bit of a mess. Yeah. But
I don't think that one umbrella in New York is functional. I don't think there's a single umbrella that's working full speed in New York City. I've never had one. If they exist, have you ever done this? I picked up an umbrella just on the train many times that it. There's no one on the train, so clearly somebody left it for good. And then I quickly realized as soon as I open it a week later, it's broken and there's a reason it was there.
The used umbrellas are never going to turn out the way you want.
No, but even the ones, I don't know. You can buy an umbrella for $3 at a bodega and you still feel like an idiot, you know?
Yep.
Let's introduce our guest for this week. We're super excited to bring this person on because we're both huge fans. This week we have the one and only, the podcast legend, Jimmy Pardo.
Hello, fellas. By the way, I'm on board. I think used umbrellas is a great fantasy baseball team. I'm on board with something I just said. What an awful sentence that was. Hey guys, I'm on board with what I'm about to tell you.
Jimmy, we're so excited to have you on. I wanted to say before we got too much into it, you have one of my favorite music jokes I've ever heard in my life.
I would like to hear what that joke is, because I like to hear when I've been funny.
I might butcher the way you said it, but I was at a Never Not Funny live show. I think it was the 500th episode at UCB, one of the UCBs. And the guest said that they had seen Bjork at Carnegie Hall. And you said, who are you guys there to see? And I laughed so loud that multiple friends told me they heard my laugh on the recording because I like went nuts.
First of all, that's a good joke. Hey, I'm on board with that joke. I think that's a good joke, and more people need to really come around to my thought process. Hey, I apologize for asking this now on the air, and then I should have asked it before we started. Is this also video or is it just audio?
It's just audio that we're going
to
use.
So we're just the video is just for us to enjoy each other's faces.
Exactly.
Great. Okay.
Then
I'm out. I only do video.
I just
only
wanted
video,
to see,
no audio.
I wanted you to see what my apartment looks like. So that was kind of my plan.
As I said before we started, are you in your childhood bedroom?
And it is my 30-year-old bedroom.
Who now is that? I can't see clear enough. Is that Chris Bryant?
That is Chris Bryant in the big famed.
Very impressed with my
good eyesight
of stances, I guess that would be. Is that your favorite player, Tommy?
You know, he was definitely my favorite player on that World Series team. I was huge on Chris Bryant. Javi Baez
current?
Now better.
I was gonna say, I think Javi Baez is probably my favorite right now.
Jimmy, you're a Cub guy too, Tom?
Yeah, I'm a Cubs man myself too. I'm from Indiana, so it was either Cubs, Reds or Cardinals for people who are in Indiana for the most part. Nobody's really White Sox fans in Indiana that I know.
Even what about like in the Gary, Indiana area?
That's probably White Sox country, but we don't talk about Gary in this household.
Because of Michael Jackson? Is that why we're...
Yeah, we're too proud.
Yeah, don't even bring it up. Don't even... After what that... All right. No, funny there.
After what the media did to him, we don't bring it up.
The media... Listen, the media is awful. My president tells us that on a regular basis. Literally couldn't go 3 minutes without me saying that. I apologize.
Hey, we're a pro 45 podcast. I think that you know that.
I didn't know that, but I'm glad to hear it, though. I'm thrilled that you guys have like thoughts.
Maybe we could turn the video on and have you endorse our president. Then we can turn it back off.
Well, you were wearing the hat. I assumed that's why you wanted the video on.
I want people to see my MAGA hat. Yes, of course. They can't hear it.
Oh, man.
But they'll hear my racist thoughts and just assume I'm wearing it soon.
they'll figure it out.
Yep.
You keep calling it the Chinese virus. It makes it very clear how you feel.
How is that different if I say Chinese food? Everything about it's different. There's not a thing about it that's not different, you jackass.
Jimmy, how have you found Zooming podcasting? Like Zoom podcasting, how's that gone for you guys?
as well as this. You know, if when you're with the right people, it's a good conversation. Luckily, we have not. We've done like 8, I think now. Wow. with Zoom, and you know, we've got all 4 of us in a different location plus a guest, so we got 5 in different locations. And so, you know, obviously there's some talking over each other sometimes, but so far so good. You know,
you guys have done maybe the best of it with the delay, because I feel like a lot of podcasts have that delay, and there's nothing it seems like you can do about it, but for whatever reason you guys have done so far consistently a great job. One of my favorite podcasts of all time was the one you guys put out last week. The Marin and Pardo together, man.
So good.
What a great matchup.
You know what? Mark was surprisingly humble and kind.
I gotta say, that was pretty crazy. That Robert Klein talk was pretty wild. Him coming out. So I mean, it's not. It felt like old Marin,
right? Like just for a second. And why take a swipe at Klein of all people? Like. But I thought
right
was,
on the way out.
It's been 10 years. I mean, he has not been on the show in 10 years.
Yeah. When you said that, I was shocked, because it was, I know you originally it was like, yeah, maybe it has been a few years. And then, yeah, it's from the almost the beginning of the show. It's crazy.
Yeah. It was 2000. Well, I guess it would be 10 years ago if I don't understand how a calendar works. 2010, then I guess. Episode 610 is when he was on. For some reason, that stuck in my head. But yeah, it's been a while. And I'm glad that you guys enjoyed that. Although, quite frankly, only Tom said he did. Tommy, I just assume.
I emailed Tommy and said that I loved it.
Definite.
Just because I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. But it was nice. It was nice to talk to Mark. I guess he is on TV now.
It was nice to kind of we're not going to talk too much about Marin on this, but it was very interesting to hear and almost refreshing that he's still so angry about other people's success.
Yes, right. And because he, for all practical purposes, he's done it. He won.
Yeah, he's right. You said it yourself. 5 hours. What more can you have now?
Right.
But man,
I mean, in fairness, of those hour specials, 45 minutes of him getting up and down from a stool. So I mean, that takes time.
That is most of it, and he makes a lot of noise. He's getting up there in age. I like how he called himself middle aged. I don't know about that.
No, he's older than I am, and I would not call myself middle aged. I'm not going to live to be 110. I'm not 55, by the way. I am not 55. I'm not aged 55, and I certainly can't drive it.
I wanted to ask you, because obviously it's funny how it's already getting, I think, maybe boring to people to have people ask them how they're doing or what they're doing during quarantine. But nonetheless, I'm going to ask you anyway. I am on board with my own question.
Yes. And the question is,
what are you doing to keep sane during this? I know you guys are putting out content and stuff still, but
we're doing that. You know, I think I said it on this week's show. Like, I literally get depressed when we're done recording, because it's like, well, there goes that. Yeah, that time's
the same
over.
The same thing when we're done with this, me and Tommy often linger for a few extra minutes just because we're like, I guess we have to go back to our regular lives.
Just regular partners. You know, I'm lucky. I got the greatest wife and son in the world. And, you know, so far so good that we have not yelled at each other. And, you know, we're still enjoying each other's company. But, you know, that's got to wear thin. I'm annoying. That's got to wear thin soon. They're both wonderful. I'm the problem in this Bermuda Triangle.
And it is missing, right? The family's missing.
I think
even in this pandemic, they're out looking for elsewhere to live to not have to deal with my BS.
Have you been? I know that you've talked before about this, but are you still able to jog?
You know, I haven't been jogging in a while because my legs are not happy with me about it anymore. So
yeah.
I've had to kind of shut down the jogging, and I think it's affecting my hip. And listen, when you're middle-aged like I am, you know, your body starts breaking down. Why are you running? Are you going out running?
I've been running, and I was listening to the podcast while I was running, and it made me think of it's weird to run now, and I don't do it very often, but it's kind of a thing where I feel like I have to do it, or else I just go I think about it all day if I don't do some kind of exercise, I guess. But the running is my favorite type because it clears my mind, and I can listen to podcasts or whatever. It's my time away from everybody. Yeah. And it's that little bit of space you get. But man, it's hard to run with the mask on. And I, if I'm being totally honest, I did that once and I got the mask called sweaty. I was like, I can't do that again.
Well, I mean, but we, in fact, we talked about this on the episode, on our show today as well. Unless you're around other people, you don't need the mask.
That's
right?
That's what I think. But I think we're at a time where it's tricky. And I find myself doing it too, where you get judgmental of people.
Uh-huh.
And people are judgmental of you. And in my head, I'm going, this person hates me because I'm not wearing a mask right now.
You know, if I may quote a joke that never made my act, but I remember when SARS was a problem, you know, and everybody was wearing masks for that. And I was like, you know what? I had a flight. I forget where I was going to, but I had to get on an airplane. I went to LAX and I had the mask with me. And then I was like, I'm not going to wear this thing. Everybody's going to look at me and they're going to make fun of me. And then I went, nobody cares what you're wearing. Nobody's going to look at you with your mask and nobody's judging you. And then I'm not kidding. So I did not wear it. I turned the corner. A woman came towards me wearing a mask, and I went, "Look at this fucking idiot!" I literally couldn't let the first person I saw, I had to make fun of. And that's kind of how I feel now. It's like, but I'm the opposite now. Now when I see somebody, like, "Hey, how come this person's not wearing a mask?" It's like, well, either are you. You know, cross the street.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
I want to point one more thing out, and then we have. I guess there was one more thing I wanted to bring up about the pod, but. Do you have a virtual background of the studio behind you?
Oh, shoot. Let me get that off. Sorry.
No, I don't care. It's just, it was at first I was like, oh, that's cool. You have such a cool studio set up there. And then
that's the virtual background. Hang on. I'll choose another one. I'll give you something that, there we go. Nighttime.
There we go.
That's old Comiskey. That's old Comiskey.
My computer's not good enough to have a virtual background, and it's a real kick in the balls.
Like, yeah, true.
I can't afford it, the virtual background.
I'm going to tell you something. You don't need to with that gorgeous background you got there with your trinkets from your childhood. You know, a pennant you got on pennant night at the Bulls game. You're fine.
the last thing I wanted to bring over the pod, and then we'll get started with our show. But
then we'll start recording.
Then we'll start recording. We just wanted to hang out with you, man. We're very lonely.
I get to get an opportunity to hang out with some middle-aged dude, pick his brain a little bit, see what it was like in the old days.
Sure. There's a quote, and I was talking to Tommy about this earlier, that me and Tommy both quote a lot that I don't even know if you would remember, but I have a feeling you would because you have a very sharp memory.
Can you set up the scenario and let's see if I can guess what it was?
It's you quoting another comedian, I think, Robert Klein, just based on what the complaint was, but it was
he's talking about Charo. Does that set you up?
And I think it's Ruth Buzzy that you were talking about.
It's two things. Initially, it was the Gabors, one of the Gabor sisters, and I think it was Zsa Zsa because Ava had an acting career. Zsa Zsa never really did, and then the last time I saw him, it was Ruth Buzzy. And it's like, if this is what it was, what does she do?
That's it. We always say that around our apartment.
We say that all the time. What does she do?
What does she do? It is maybe the fact that you guys remember that proves to like how much I say it. And it's one of my favorite comedy lines of all time. Like,
I think it's so funny. And it's just so funny to be some angry still about something.
Still angry at Ruth Buzzy in 2017 when I last saw him.
So I just worked with him at maybe a year and a half ago at Caroline's, and it was crazy. I felt like I was like I couldn't believe it was happening, but
it's you know, as you heard, Maron doesn't
not as cup. Doesn't
care for him at all. And there's a lot of comics that don't give him the credit, but he's in my top three of all time.
I love him. I didn't know who he was until the movie Comedian. Jerry Seinfeld's documentary features him pretty heavily, and there's a great scene with him. And then I loved him in that. And then I bought one of his books for like a dollar at some shitty book sale. And I was a huge fan.
Yeah, that book is great. Is that the one about the Confessions of a Busboy or whatever
it's
called?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great book. And you get to see him, you know, working at the Catskills and all that stuff. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with him twice. And both times he could not have been nicer to me. The first time he was so nice
to me too. Yeah.
He shouldn't even give me the time of day the first time I worked with him. That's how bad. I mean, I bombed miserably in front of him.
Was it Chicago days?
It was, yeah. It was just Chicago in 19. Like, I don't even think I was a full-time comic yet. And the booker liked me and said, I know that he's your hero. I'm going to book you with him. And I mean, it was literally just a favor, almost a pity booking. But he was nice to me and treated me kindly. And then the next time was about like 3 years ago, where I, you know, I was who I am today. And, you know, I you guys know, I mean, you know my, I don't really talk about, I crushed it, man. That's not my bag. But that night I did. In fact, I walked off and Bud Friedman said, you know, money in the bank, man. You're always money in the bank. And which made you feel good, because yeah. Bud Friedman was this guy that you always just wanted him to, you know, give you that approval. And then Klein was just like, who are you? That was amazing. And it was one of those sets too, where you go, yeah, you should be saying that. Like that's how good that was. And, to have my hero, one of my heroes, say that was, you know, very rewarding.
Tom, do you remember what Klein said when he saw me perform?
Yeah, I think he said, "Wasn't that the waiter?" He got you confused with the guy who came in and wait, what were you going to say?
I was hoping for a "What does he do?"
What does he
fuck
do?
Me. I really blew that. I'm sorry.
Another hammer, Tommy McNamara. What does he do?
I apologize, Tommy. I really screwed you there. I was in my head like, was Tommy on that show? And then I felt bad that I had forgotten. Well, comedy people.
You guys are both still in Bloomington, right?
Oh, man. Bloomington. What is
that's where you opened for me, right, Tom?
That is right. Yeah. At the Limestone Comedy Festival, presented by Jared Thompson and Miller Lite. And Madelano Martin. We have a segment with Jared coming up, which we should get to in just a minute. First of all, let's talk about what we're here to talk about, the band Chicago, which you have brought to us today.
And we're out of time. That is
too bad we ran out of time. So, that is a bummer.
Look, how does this work? So I bring a band that I like and you guys just crap on it?
No, not that at all. Tommy, yes, does, but I am on your team here. And no, what happens is we started this podcast because I like Coldplay and I was tired of people making fun of them. And I wanted to hear another, I thought it was a bit hacky how people made fun of it. And I thought it'd be fun to hear another side. And so we started having comics on who like music that people make fun of, and then hearing their side of the story. And then we give the music a fair chance and listen to it with open ears.
Okay. Still feels like I'm getting set up to step in a bear trap, but all right.
I mean, there's elements of that for sure, but it's not quite a bear trap because we're warning you about it at a time, but
you can still go, hey, go out in the field and there's one out there somewhere. And then you got to keep looking. It's like when I was in Vietnam, you know, a guy my age went to Vietnam.
And it was my buddy, John McCain, right?
My buddy. Oh, Jesus. Johnny and I, what Johnny did for the rest of us from his platoon, I can only thank him. I can only thank him. And his daughter, God bless her, holding up the family name.
One of the best TV personalities we have.
Really? You know what? Pops on camera. seems pleasant at all times. Certainly continue to let her have a job.
Man, the look on her face when Michelle Wolf was doing the thing, it made me certain that I would hate her forever. I mean, obviously, her politics make that easy, but just as a person, you kind of think, like, maybe this person's decent in some way, but then the scowl on her face during that really settled that she's not a good person.
I never saw this. So they cut to her in the audience at the
I believe she's on. Is she not on stage? She might be. Maybe she is. I guess that they're not sitting on stage. Yeah, she's sitting in the audience and they cut to her and she just looks so angry. And really? It's like, these people are supposedly the ones with the best sense of humor you always hear.
Right.
That they don't take anything. Why are liberals so offended all the time? She made a joke about her eyeliner and you think that she had said the worst thing that ever been said.
You know,
and it was all just for political points.
I'll say this about that particular joke. The problem was, in my opinion, you know, Sarah Huckabee has a lazy eye.
Nobody heard the joke. I'm an idiot. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so, but you're not wrong. That's the one everybody points to. Cause at the end of the day, it was an eyeshadow joke, but immediately you stop listening. Once you go, is she really making fun of her eye?
So, yeah.
But that said, that set was full of nothing but great jokes. And if you can't walk away from that going, okay, I never heard of that woman. Some of that was maybe a little too harsh. But at the end of the day, it's a roast kind of thing, and let's enjoy her. So very timely. Do you guys want to talk about
the Whitewater crisis. Wrong person. So really good thing to bring up for me. I appreciate the grace and just moving by it, but I did say the wrong person. Anyway.
Does anyone really know what time it is, though, gentlemen? That's my question.
So
I tell you a quick story about that. I'm sorry.
Please, yeah.
Can I jump in? My wife was kind enough. She was just my girlfriend at the time, and I went to the Chicago fan convention, the band Chicago fan convention in, God, it's got to be 20 years ago, maybe even more. What is the, what is this? The 2020? So 20, so like 1999, maybe. And this was in, at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. And I was, and I went and my, I was there for a few days. And then my, my then girlfriend, now wife, flew in to join me. And she's like, "Hey, how's this convention going?" I go, "You know what? It's actually a lot of fun. It's a bunch of just normal people who just like the same band. And it's, there's no weirdos. It's nothing." And literally, as soon as I'm done doing that, somebody says in the, and we're at the convention. Somebody goes, "Hey, you know what time it is?" And somebody goes, "Anybody really care?" And my wife goes, "That's what I expected." And it was like, God damn it. You just literally, after I just, they're good people. It's all fine. It's all going to be good. Nerd, nerd, nerd. Horrible.
That's I had a buddy who was really into Rush like that, and he would go to conventions, and there was like a little group of friends that would meet up, and they only met because of these Rush weekends that they would do, where they would go see a show and then they would rent like a condo or something and just hang out for the rest of the weekend. And it was a weird Rush party. And my buddy introduced me to one of these people. He's like, "No, he's like a normal guy." And of course he was a freak. He couldn't right. have been a bigger Rush freak. He looked yeah. exactly like a Rush t-shirt. I really, it was, yeah, it was the worst case scenario for him.
Imagine getting quarantined in the Rush condo.
I would choose free will.
There it is.
There we go. So what we usually do on this yes. show is do a little bit of a background with your history with the band. So okay. when did you get into Chicago? What were the beginning experiences for you with Chicago?
I my father was a drummer in a band. They would play a lot of Chicago. Mm. And my dad was really into Chicago. As you know what, my dad was, I guess in 1973, my dad would have been 30. So like he's right in the pocket of who was, you know, Chicago's audience. Like, you know, he was into it. So he was really into Chicago. So I would hear him playing it. But I never really was a huge fan. And then in 1981, my friend Gary invited me to go see Chicago at Chicago Fest, which used to be before Taste of Chicago, mm. Where they had various stages and, you know, rock stage, country stage, main stage. And Chicago was on the main stage in 81. They did a matinee and an evening show. And we went to the matinee. And Gary insisted, because it was a, you know, general seating, general admission, we could sit wherever you want, that we get there at 7 a.m. so that we could sit in the front row. So we sat in the front. My first concert was Kiss in 79. But this was my second concert. There I am in the front row. And it's hard not to fall in love with a band when you're sitting that sneaking close. And, you know, I knew the tunes and I, you know, it just was, it was pretty amazing. And then from there, I was like, "Hey, I want to listen to more Chicago." And then admittedly, just became obsessed with them through high school, just obsessed with them. And it was during, I got obsessed with them during their little downtime in 81, because Terry Kath passed away in 78. And, you know, after 79, they really didn't have any hits anymore. And then they didn't have another hit until 82. So I kind of fell in love with them while they were struggling, and then came back with them in their resurgence. So, that's kind of how I got into them. And, you know, I've seen them over 100 times in concert.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's a lot. But if you think about it, like my first one was 81. So that's, you know, almost 40 years ago, right? 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Marin was on in 2010.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Marin was on 2010. That's how we measure time on this show, is when was Marin last on. So we got to reset the clock. Days since Marin was on, we got to refresh the old.
We got to refresh the signage.
That was going to be my question, was Terry Katz still in the band when you saw them the first time?
It was not. My dad saw him a couple times when Terry was, not that that means anything to this conversation, but my dad saw him with Terry. And like I said, I saw him in 81, where they kind of were in between guitarists and they were figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, 82, is when Bill Champlin joined. And I guess he joined late 81 for the 82 release of 16, but Chicago 16. And then that's when I saw them like crazy. So, you know, I would see them maybe, you know, if they came to Chicago and did three shows, I was at all three shows, even as a high school kid, because tickets were only like $12.50. And what else was I spending money on? You know what I mean? Like, I worked, I had jobs, and so I had the money to go, and hey, Chicago's in town, I'm going. So there's $36 for three shows, which isn't that crazy.
Wow. That's interesting to become. I don't know why I feel like this, but I feel like it's interesting to become a fan at the concert. Like, have you had that happen, Tommy? Have you ever gone to see someone you've never seen before, or that you weren't that into, and then you saw them live, and then you became a fan?
That's happened with like openers. I've seen openers and then gotten really sure. Where I didn't know who they were and then checked them out after. And there was a band, Humphreys McGee, that someone talked about on this podcast. Yes. And I went to see them and then I really liked their show. So it's happened a couple times, but it is wild to see them once on a whim and then see them 100 times.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, I grew up listening to them with my dad and stuff. And of course, this is the time where Chicago was, you know, every album they released was number one as I was a kid growing up. So I heard them on the radio constantly. So it wasn't like this undiscovered band. They were, you know, they were undiscovered to me in a deep dive. But I knew Saturday in the Park, and I knew 25 or 64, and doesn't even know what time it is. And, you know, Feeling Stronger Every Day. I knew all those hits. It was the album tracks that I got into. And then, you know, literally, I mean, you think you've got stuff on your walls. I had nothing but Chicago posters on my wall. Nothing but, I mean,
that was exactly what I was about to ask is, how do you feel? Me and Tommy both watched a documentary about them today. Yeah. And I didn't realize, cause I had only heard those major hits myself. And I grew up on the ballad and Saturday in the Park, but I didn't realize how angry the rest of the band was about If You Leave Me Now.
Yeah.
So were you never into that?
Into that song or into their infighting?
I guess into all of them, but I guess specifically
like the ballad era.
Era.
Well, If You Leave Me Now was in 1977, so that was like long before, you know, what that 80s stuff that people grew to hate them. Like Terry was still in the band, and you know, people have rewritten history on whether or not, you know, Terry would be rolling over in his grave if he heard Hard to Say I'm Sorry. Would he? He's on If You Leave Me Now. He didn't seem to have a problem with that, or maybe he did. And you know, again, people are rewriting how he reacted to that. You know, my friend Scott Aukerman, you know, you guys probably know Scott from
huge
the Comedy Bang Bang podcast. I jokingly said, he asked me about a song, and I said, I said, that's actually my top 10 favorite Chicago songs, and I'll give you my top 50 if I'm ever that bored. And it turns out a pandemic hit, and I got that bored. And so I just recently made my top 50, I think it's top 60 Chicago songs. And there's not a lot, as much as I like those ballads, in fact, let me look it up very quickly, only because you asked me.
Is it a public Spotify playlist you got going, or is this is pen and paper?
This is pen and paper, and I haven't even typed it out yet. In fact, you guys are the first to hear about it. Scott hasn't even seen or heard about it yet.
Wow, the stenographer this is breaking comes news. In.
This is, all right, here we go. I'm going to go down to the first actual ballad would be, good Lord. Here it is. So I don't know what this is. 20. Oh no, that's 20. Hang on. Just You and Me. I'll consider Just You and Me a ballad, but that's from 1973 and that's number 25. So we're not until number 25 before there's a ballad. And then none of the ones from the 80s, are even on here until, the end. Is this entertaining to anybody? Me looking at my paper?
Yes.
No, this is what the listeners tuned in for. This is the magic that,
Guys, I got 50. It's 52 songs on this list. Like Hard to Say I'm Sorry, Hard Habit to Break, You're the Inspiration. They're not even on here.
Wow. I liked the story for You're the Inspiration that was in this doc that we watched today. Have you seen what was the name of this documentary, Tommy?
Now More Than Ever, the Peter Pardini.
Are you really asking if I've seen it? I know the goddamn thing.
I don't know.
I'm in that documentary, Tom.
Oh, wait, which part? At the very end?
At the end, yes.
Oh, okay. I still had like 15 minutes left. I was doing double duty today. You caught me, Jimmy. Is this what you wanted? You did it.
I was gotcha warned podcast? Of bear traps. Now I'm setting them. I'm in the goddamn thing, the Pardini documentary.
My mistake. What a fool I look. Look, I've never even heard of this documentary. I don't know what it was. no, I watched an hour and a half of this fucking documentary, and you expect what did they hit you at the end? They got to open with you. What are you talking about?
Can I tell you something? I've told this story a zillion times. I am in the documentary, and I was honored to be asked to be part of it. I truly was honored to be asked to be part of it. And as it went to the festivals, he kept doing re-edits on where I was in the in it. And there was a time where I was like, I came in not long after Terry's death, and it was like this welcome, like, because I get a laugh,
right?
And people are like, "Oh, he gets a like the band." When I eventually talked to them, they were like, "Oh, you're so funny in that." It was like, "Well, there's no other funny in it. Like, it's so, you know, I think Jimmy Pankow said to me, "You got the biggest laugh in the movie." Well, it's not a comedy movie, and. But I was very flattered by that. And then as they got into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Peter had to keep re-editing the movie, he was kind enough to still keep me in it. And I'm in at the very end over the credits. And people are like, "Oh, that's too bad. You're only in over the credits." Like, I shouldn't be in the thing at all. Like, there's no reason for comedians to be part of to be in the Chicago documentary. But like, just a dream come true to be part of it. And then, you know, because of that movie, to kind of become friendly with the band, it's been pretty amazing.
The hardest I laughed during the movie was at the part when...
Wait, it wasn't the Jimmy part?
Aside from the Jimmy part.
Thank you. Thank you for the save, Tom.
One of the horn players says that people would come up to me like, "What is this? Where are the strings?"
And oh, I know. There's no way anybody did that.
Like, people had never seen a trumpet.
I thought it was a great documentary. That part should have been cut to save that man humiliation, because there's no way that anybody went up and go, "A horn? Where's the strings?"
I'm friends with the band. I don't disagree with you. There's nobody ever said that. Nobody ever. Come on.
The Hendrix thing was crazy.
That was insane. Yeah.
That's the, you know what, that's one of those that some people push back on and say never happened. But I'd like to think that it did, because he ended up bringing Chicago on tour with them. Mm. And so why you make up that quote for 50 years?
And also, it was one that it felt like they made a point of hammering it in, because they showed three or four of them saying it in succession. Like, right. They all had the exact same quote. And I felt like they were trying to get this did happen, and it happened this way. Because hearing it from one person, I could see that you going, "I don't know. That seems like he might be misremembering, maybe," mm-hmm. you know, self-aggrandizing or something. But no, that was, yeah, it seemed like that happened for sure. And it was, I thought that was really cool.
For those that don't know, that quote was apparently Jimi Hendrix came up to them after seeing Chicago at the Whiskey a Go Go and said, "You guys are amazing. Your horns play like one set of lungs, and your guitarist is better than I am."
Yeah.
And look, Terry was a great guitarist. I think Jimmy was maybe had acid underneath his bandana. but look, Robert Klein told me, you know, said to me, "Who the hell are you?" And somebody else might look at me and go, "Hey, he's fine. I think he's funny enough." I don't know. Yeah. So, you know, maybe Jimmy thought Terry was amazing. You know what I mean? But other guitarists go, "There's no way Jimi Hendrix said that to him." Maybe he did. Maybe that's what he liked. You know, who the frick knows?
And Jimmy famously asked if those horns where the strings were.
The very first thing I did when I saw that band, I said, "Fellas, I've been listening to you since 81. Where the hell are those strings?" And then Lee Lochner, the trumpet player, hit me in the balls with his trumpet.
I guess because, yeah, growing up when I did, I'd only heard kind of Saturday in the Park and the ballads. And I was kind of shocked to see the stuff with Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. And
right?
Just them being in that late 60s scene, which I didn't associate them with at all. So that was really interesting to me.
It's pretty neat, right? And if you listen to those first three albums, maybe even the first five, the fourth one's a live album, but the first four studio albums, it's, you know, the only real radio friendly song is Saturday in the Park. Everything else is kind of their album tracks that in Color My World, but that, you know, that's kind of part of a big, you know, ballet for A Girl in Buchanan. Really, that's the only radio friendly song. Like, people are like, "Oh, they didn't have any hits." They're all those albums went to number one. Like, wow. The album sold. They didn't need singles. They weren't that band, and they ended up being a singles band. But in reality, they could have made a decision at some point to be the Grateful Dead or Dave Matthews or Fish. They could have easily been that. And if you listen to, like, Live at Carnegie Hall, which is their fourth album and their first live album, it is them jamming out for 15 minutes. Like, you know, I've got Live in Japan that it Hit by Varese, I think, goes on for 13 minutes. And on the record, it's five, you know? So like that's the kind of band that they were. And then it all changed. I'm sure that they enjoyed making money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they even talk about that in there. They're like, there was so much money to be had. And then they got screwed over by their original contract that they stayed on for too long. It seemed like,
yeah, their producer and manager, Jimmy Garcia, was a great producer and maybe not the nicest manager. I believe he may have stolen money from the gentleman, but
they said millions of dollars, which I think that man got his due. I think he deserved it. He created that weird ranch that they had to live on or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like the up in the Caribou Ranch.
We should see
burned down.
Oh, really?
Was yeah, there, burned down in the 80s at some point, and a lot of master tapes and stuff were all burned up. And
I really related to that part because Jared, if you're a comic in Bloomington, Indiana, Jared makes you live on a little farm.
Oh, he does? And,
you have to work out your material.
A lot of cows.
He said, if you make the cows laugh, that's when you're ready for my stage. It's really I think it's good for people.
Should we play Jared's voicemail now?
I was setting old Jared up. So each week, we like to go to our resident snob of the show, our friend and foe of the podcast, Jared Thompson, the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, the co-founder of the Limestone Comedy Festival. And he often has pretty harsh views on the music that we play on the show. I'm very curious to hear what he's going to say on this. I never listened to it before.
And he's going to talk about Chicago here?
He's going to be talking about Chicago. He knows that Jimmy Pardo is the guest. I'm going to tell you right now, Jared gets livid if we speak while his voicemail is playing. I just like to give a heads up because I get texted if anybody talks.
Okay. So, last weekend's because of that.
It's actually true. All right. Here is Jared Thompson.
What's up, y'all? It's This Week's They Went to Jared. The boys are going to have my pal Jimmy Pardo on discussing Chicago. We've talked about this quite a bit because our mutual pal Brad Wilhelm hates the band. And so we've sort of ganged up on him a lot over the years talking about this. Honestly, if not for the 80s, Chicago would be viewed, in my opinion, as like a pretty legendarily elite band. I think that the majority of people who like 70s rock think they're great. And I think that the fact that they just didn't stop making music is the only reason that they would ever need to be talked about on something like this. But much like Jimmy, I love the 80s era. You know, you're the inspiration, Hard to Say I'm Sorry, Hard Habit to Break. Those songs I think are really great. I mean, I am just like Jimmy. I'll go as far as to say that the Peter Cetera solo stuff in the 80s I really like. So, but I understand that there's a major difference between 70s Chicago, where the songs, like a Led Zeppelin fan can listen, you know, like someone that listens to mostly hard rock would still like a lot of those songs. And, you know, the ballads from that era, the Terry Kath ballads, and I mean, they're great songs and they're timeless. And to me, they're one of my maybe 10 or so favorite bands ever. I think Jimmy actually has them as his number one band ever. I love this, you know, to have, I mean, I like Tommy, of course, but to have two of my favorite people, Tom and Jimmy, talking on this podcast, I'm really excited to hear it. And I hope you guys are doing well, Jimmy. And we'll talk soon. All right. Thanks, guys. Love you. Bye.
Not necessary shot there.
What a sweet message from Jared Thompson.
It was a great message. And then at the very end, unnecessarily, Tommy's going to get kicked in the groin.
The what?
I think he just went too long without saying something negative, so it, his body didn't know what to do.
I think you're right. I think that's exactly what it was. he started to feel the acid boiling up in his chest. He goes, I got to get this out or else it's going to come back at me.
It's going to eat me up.
Exactly. I will give Jared credit. That was the shortest one of those he's ever said.
Really?
So that's exciting. Yeah.
And it kind of echoed exactly everything I just said to you guys. Like although, again, this top 52 list I made, Maybe I don't love the 80s stuff as much as I thought I did. I do love the 80s stuff. There's 80s deep cuts in this top 52, but those hits, maybe I'm unfair. Maybe when I made this list, I was even thinking, I don't need to include those. I've heard those enough. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I unfairly excluded
them. You underthought
them.
This whole thing.
Say it again, Tom.
I'm starting to think you underthought this whole list.
You know what? I got three. I actually only have three songs written down. I made the whole thing up.
We are going to play all 52 in full.
Yeah, we usually do top six. This one, why not, Tommy? Let's just play all 52.
Play all 52, guys, and then I'll come back next week to apologize to everybody. I will tell you, for the six that I chose for you guys, I didn't pick my top six. I picked six throughout their career. Mm-hmm. Like I picked some from early in their career, one from right in the middle, and then two from the 80s. That maybe might open some people's eyes to that they were more than those 80s ballads that, you know, a lot of people your age, really, that's all you know.
Yeah, and just watching the documentary, I realized how little I know about this band, so I'm happy that you did it that way. And even a song like 25 or 64, which I've heard the title of 100 times, I didn't really know what it sounded like, and it does sound like a Zeppelin song to me.
In fact, the bass riff is very similar to a Zeppelin. I can't pull the Zeppelin tune at the moment, but the boom, there's a riff that's very Zeppelin-y, very Fleetwood Mac-y in the bass that... I forget. I remember one time in my drunken earlier younger days, was fighting about which one came first. And I think Zeppelin came out like literally the song that we were fighting about, the Zeppelin song came out maybe a month earlier.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, but Chicago would have been in the studio, man. Like just fighting it. Like, first of all, who gives a shit? You weirdo fighting about a bass riff, you drunken buffoons. But yes, they're, to your point, the very, and to Jared's point, that a Zeppelin fan probably would walk around back in the 70s, in 74, would walk around a Chicago shirt and people would go, yeah, man, Chicago, in the same way they would if they were wearing a Stones or a Zepp shirt.
Let's start hearing some clips from these songs. So you give me a title and I'll cue it up.
This is my favorite Chicago song. It's called Dialogue. It's off Chicago 5, written by Robert Lamb. It comes in two parts, Dialogue Part 1, Dialogue Part 2. And it's basically about a college guy and a hippie talking about the state of the world, and it's a coming outside of the Vietnam and the end of the war and so on and so forth.
Should we go with part one or part two, Jimmy?
Part one is the meat of it. Part two is just kind of gets the people on their feet at the concert chanting along. We can make it happen.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I remember this one.
Make it happen. Yeah. There we go. You don't have to play it now. Let me ask you guys a question.
Are you optimistic? Don't you ever worry when you see what's going down.
Well, I'm proud of my business, that is no business at all.
It's Terry Kath and Peter Terror on the vocals.
It's time to function as a feeling human being. With your bachelor of arts, help you get by.
Tommy, do me a favor. Jump to Dialogue Part 2 now so they can hear just like what basically is like ends up being the chorus of the song.
Yeah. I am liking this bass line a lot. And yeah. Isn't that a great bass line? Right? Yeah.
This isn't a single. This isn't. It was released as a single, but this isn't on radio. Like Hard to Say I'm Sorry. This was...
I jump ahead a little bit. To focus in there.
I wouldn't. I would let all 7 minutes play. Kidding.
Make it happen.
She can make it happen.
That guitar. Damn it.
You're walking around the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam listening to this song.
Listen, when I was back there, I mean, you guys don't know the shit I saw there. It just was. But to hear my favorite band playing in the background, well, we don't know what we're stepping in. It was Bear rough. Again, that's off Chicago 5, 1972. I said 75 earlier by mistake because I was thinking of Chicago 5 being 75. But it's 1972 that song came out, right in the heart of Vietnam.
And don't forget Marin 2010. So
thank you. About
38 years back from there. Yep.
You know, I voted for Marin in 2010. So you say Marin 2010 makes sense.
It's what got us in this mess.
You blaming him for this? Cat food for everybody.
Think about it. Right around him getting everything he needed in this industry, that's when we got the old orange man in the White House.
You think he sold his soul to the devil, and that's what happened here, huh?
Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't think his hands are clean. I don't know.
Well, there's no question they're not clean. I'm with you, Tom.
What do we got for number two?
Number two is Beginnings by Chicago. Good thing I told you the band. Chicago. Idiot I am. Hey, this one's going to be by Chicago, you guys. Beginnings, that's right off the first album, CTA. Great song about it. You know, it's a love song, but it doesn't have that. God damn it, I'm having acid reflux like crazy. Jared's voicemail got me all rattled. You know, it's a great, again, another song written by Robert Lamb. Great song.
I'm with you. Doesn't matter where we are or what we're doing. I'm with you, that's all that matters. Time passes much too quickly. When we're together laughing, I wish I could
those drum fills in the background.
Oh, no. I wish I could sing it to you.
That was part of the documentary that made me like sad, was the original drummer getting booted. What a bummer that was.
You know, he, as they pointed out in that documentary, he became more obsessed with the business end of it and mm-hmm. and ignored the drumming part of it. Danny, you know, my dad was a drummer, like I said, and so he, you know, and a lot of drummers from that era, they idolized this guy.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Seraphim was considered one of the best drummers of all time. And then again, to Jared's point, the 80s just kind of make everybody forget musically and sonically and songwriting wise how great this band was.
And he's not Ringo Starr. He's not just keeping time. Like, those are crazy fills he's doing. And they're singing
this
solo
guy. This guy's great.
Yeah. So I mean, it seems like from the documentary, they like the new guy they found. I don't know what you think of him versus the other guy.
Well, it was Tris Imboden, and Tris is gone now, and they've got a guy named Wilfredo Reyes, who's great. Mm-hmm. I like Tris too. Tris has played on a zillion albums you guys have heard. He was like a session guy for years, then you know joined Chicago. I think it was Chicago for 15 years or something. But he's great. But Danny just had a feel and a vibe to him, whereas Tris was. I've argued with drummers about this. I'm not a drummer, so I don't know what I'm talking about. Tris feels more. You know how there's even comics like Seinfeld's one of the greatest comics in the world, but you know he's a technician. Right. You know, whereas like you know you don't go to Jerry for crowd work and just to have a guy be spur of the moment funny, but you don't come to me for a joke. You know what I mean? Like so. I feel the same with Danny and Tris. Like, I think Danny plays from his gut and Tris plays from his head. And that's not an insult to anybody.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. And I think that kind of comes across in the way they talked about him too.
Yeah. Do you want another song?
Yeah, let's do
this
it.
Let's cruise through.
This is off Chicago 2. This is part of that aforementioned ballet for a girl in Buchanan. This is the other kind of hit that came out of that called Make Me Smile.
Well, only 3 minutes.
But it's part of like a 9-minute thing. And you know this
they
song.
They don't know.
I would think I know.
I'm alone in the dark, even though time and time again I see your face smiling inside.
Damn it, that's a great song.
Jimmy, you could have given me 10 guesses as to what band played that song before this. Chicago would not have been in those 10 guesses.
Who? Give me an example of who your guesses would have been.
Maybe Joe Cocker, I would have thrown out there.
Hey, you know what? I could see somebody guessing Joe Cocker.
With
somebody
the voice, the way.
No, I can hear Joe Cocker because of the gravelly voice. Sure,
the gravelly, yeah. Well, then he's kind of reaching on those notes. But yeah.
That was one of the, like, I believe I could be wrong. I think that's one of, like, the 10 Chicago songs I did know coming into this. Because I grew up with a Best of Chicago album, and I'm pretty sure that was on there.
What was the cover? Do you remember the cover of it?
It was a red cover. It's funny. I was looking at
it said, Make America Great Again, right?
What's that?
Yes, it said,
exactly.
Make America Great Again. Yeah.
Sure. It wasn't Chicago 9, which is what I thought it was originally.
I think it's like Chicago 22 or 23.
That might be it. Yeah, that might be
23, maybe.
That sounds more like it, because I remember wondering why the number was what it was as a kid and not realizing that they just had so many albums.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was into this, and then kind of the hits we've already talked about, Saturday in the Park and If You Leave Me Now, all that good stuff. But yeah, this was one that I already knew and already liked. Yeah, this is great.
Glad to help. Glad to help. happy to remind you liked one. The next song is this
the
is on
Clean Up.
This is 1978. This is what kind of that middle part of their career after Terry passed away, and then before the resurgence in the 80s when Cetera took charge. This is the title track off Hot Streets.
What's that called?
It's called Hot Streets. The title track.
Who's the band?
The band is, oh, this one's by Chicago. written by Robert Lamb. This is Hot Streets comes in, guys, at 1, 2, 3, 4. This is my fifth favorite Chicago song. That's according to that list of 52 we talked about.
And it's only love and after.
Ooh. This jazzy feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mountains fly before me. Skies ahead are looking stormy. Oh, oh, oh. As the highway driver races. For a race, with time to reach a destination. His own imagination. Sky,
this is a great song. This is a great, shut it down, Tom. This has a, it's got a great guitar solo on it. It's got a great flute solo in it. The guitar is played by a guy named Donnie Dacus, replaced Terry Kath for two albums. And Donnie's a great guitarist and a great vocalist who never had a chance. Like, he was, coming in to replace Terry Kath, he never really had an opportunity to shine. The fans were never going to get behind him. In my opinion, whoever came in next was going to be gone quickly. And this album is, it's in my top five Chicago albums, Hot Streets. It is an album that is easily dismissed because, again, it was, well, it's not Terry, man. I don't care. But it's got Alive Again on it, which is a great song. No Tell Lover, which is a great song. This, the title track, again, like I said, in my top five. It's a great album that deserves to be more respected in the canon.
What is your number one album? Did you say that yet?
I did not. And I literally just locked
close
up.
To the vest.
Yeah. Play it close to the vest. Guys, I'm going to reveal that at the end and then give a big walk away. My favorite is Chicago 2. In fact, I'll just say it goes Chicago 2, Chicago Chicago 2, Chicago CTA, which is Chicago 1, Chicago 5, Hot Streets, and then kind of a tie between 16 and 17 from the 80s era.
And they were ahead of their time talking about CTA, what those NFL players go through. I really appreciate that they were on the front lines of that.
I have to be honest, I don't get that joke. I like to laugh, but I don't
CTE,
know what that's
CTE. CTE joke.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Oh, you don't know CTE? It's the concussion thing that NFL
thank you. Okay.
That's my bad. It was pretty soft. Yeah, I'll probably edit it out.
I would edit a lot of this out. I would start with that voicemail. That's the first thing I'd whack. You want my next tune?
Yes. Yeah.
This is off the aforementioned Chicago 16. And this is off, you know, Hard to Say I'm Sorry was the big hit, of course. That was the song that brought them back, number one hit. Also, Love Me Tomorrow was on this album, Chicago 16. But this is a song called Follow Me, which is written by Jimmy Pankow, the trombone player. And this is this one kind of moves a little bit. This one rocks.
I was under the impression that Uncle Cracker wrote Follow Me.
I was waiting for an Uncle Cracker riff.
I don't. I appreciate you, young people.
Uncle Cracker. Do you remember the Uncle Cracker "Follow Me" song? Because this might have been based on this. I don't know the timeline.
There's no way. I mean, it's certainly, Uncle Cracker certainly comes after this.
Now, Jimmy, I want you to listen to this and tell me what you think is better.
Okay.
We're going to play the Uncle Cracker Follow Me and get an official ruling.
And listeners, you feel free to chime in as well.
Tweet at Jimmy.
Tweet at Jimmy Pardo.
Keep me out of it.
And if you can't reach him there, go with Never Not Funny. One of these you're going to get to.
Can't turn around and say goodbye. All you know is when I'm with you, I make you free and swim through your veins like a fish in the sea. I'm singing, follow me, everything is on.
That's a nice song, right?
You know, what happened to him? Uncle Cracker. Man. I feel like he was really around for just about two songs, and then I think we never heard from him again.
I think the calendar page changed, and nobody wanted to let him know we moved on.
He stayed put.
I always despised that line, swim through your veins like a fish in the sea. I always hated that line.
Why is that, Tommy?
It's a bad image. I don't like it.
You don't like a fish in your vein?
No, don't like a fish in the van, no. All right,
it's a narrow canal. Fish is able to maneuver it. Give it some credit.
That's a good point.
Is that five songs or six?
That was five. I will say about that last one, that was Bill Champlin, and Bill joined for that album, the 16th album. He came from the Sons of Champlin, and he co-wrote a bunch of great hits. He had huge hits and award-winning songs for Earth, Wind, and Fire and George Benson and some other people. And then Bill joined Chicago, and he was there for, I think, 29 years. He was with Chicago, and Bill's a great vocalist and a great songwriter. But I think that song Follow Me that I just played, like, from Chicago 16 could have easily been on Chicago 5 and would have fit in. Like, that one didn't really have an 80s – only production kind of makes it 80s feeling. And then the last one is very 80s sounding, by the way. This one comes off Chicago 17, which, of course, was when Chicago really came back strong with – Hard Habit to Break, and You're the Inspiration, Along Comes a Woman, Stay the Night. Those were all, you know, top 20 hits, top five hits for a couple of them. And this is called We Can Stop the Hurtin', which was written by Robert Lamb. And as I'm looking at the six songs that I brought you guys, four of them are written by Robert Lamb, and two of them are written by Jimmy Pankow. And it's crazy that none of them were written by Peter Cetera, which everybody really thinks of Chicago being Cetera's band. And if you look at, like, that's six great songs that he has nothing to do with. Great bass lines, but that's right. It.
Yeah.
So here's that. We could say, listen to this keyboard in the beginning. This is 80s. You're going to get hit in the face with a large phone.
Alone, such a dime. Shouldn't we try to talk that boy out of his time? Having your head up, no, ain't nothing's getting solved. Maybe we better get involved.
You can stop the hurting for a while. You can stop the hurting for a while.
It's a song about homelessness, guys, and how we can make a difference by just giving a couple of bucks.
Did they fix that?
Well, this song came out in 84, and I haven't heard anything more about it. So I think we got it, man. I think we got it covered. Hey, they're putting them up in hotels now, guys. I mean, the homeless have it better than I do right now. This dumb guy from the south side of Chicago.
I heard
homeless guy's got the corona. They put him up at the Holiday Inn. What am I doing? I'm here in my trailer, for Christ's sake.
He thinks the Holiday Inn is the fancy hotel.
Yeah, they got it over at the Holiday Inn. It's not even the Express. It's the big one. Yeah.
Idiot. I don't know how much this is. This was in Chicago or it happens in L.A., but in Indiana, there's a lot of people who do the thing where they're like, oh, that guy on 3rd Street, the guy's making more money than any of us. I'm telling you, it's a scam. That dude has the nicest house in town. Like they come up with the craziest stories for these people. And it's like, well, even if they are, fine. If that's the way they're making a living, I'm fine.
He figured out how to do it. What do you mean? Or even the argument of like, you know, they don't need the money. Oh, they're using their kid. If they're around the corner begging for money, they're in a tough spot. Like, I'm contradicting what you just said, but arguing a different fact.
No, it's true. It is true. It's true. I'm arguing all sides. That does remind me. Guys, we're in a tough spot. If you guys could get on the Patreon, it would really the worst Patreon plug of all time. There's a lot of people struggling out there, including us.
Well, yeah, look, you guys, it's weird. We are in a tough time as performers who rely on people paying us to be asking for money while everybody is maybe in a tough spot at the moment. So it is weird for you to do that. At the same time, it's like you have to do that because that's how you make a couple of bucks.
At the same time, we do have a Patreon and we appreciate you people's measly sum.
They give these pittances to us.
It all adds up. I know of a homeless guy that's got a mansion. He's out there at the corner of I can't think of two streets in Bloomington. I panicked.
What do we got? Maybe 4th and Walnut. That's where the comedy attic is. In beautiful Bloomington, Indiana.
I don't need to tell you guys this. Comedy Attic is the best in the country. It's the greatest.
I will never get tired of hearing it because it's where I started, and I remember when that club opened, and it means the world to me that it's there. And speaking of the Comedy Attic, you guys can help the staff at the Comedy Attic out right now and help yourselves out especially if you live in Indiana by going and buying gift cards. It's not even a thing where you're just giving up money. You get something out of it. And all the money goes to that wait staff. And they're lovely people. And I am telling you, people who are waiting tables and on staffs like that in Bloomington, Indiana, are really struggling right now because there is no backup plan. So, you know, on top of your measly sum that you send us every month, we really appreciate it if you'd send those people some money.
We got one more segment before we let you go.
Sure.
Basically, Tom posts on Facebook, which is a great website that we support here.
Yes.
Oh, and he just asked, you know, what do the people think of Chicago? And we'll read you some of the select comments and you can respond to how you feel.
All right.
And respond to the ones you feel like. If you feel like, hey, that one's not even worth my friggin' time, feel free to skip it. The first one is from a man named Brian Thompson. We have a comment that says they lost their magic once Peter Cetera left the band.
Look, Cetera left in 85. They had a huge hit in 89 with Look Away, and Chicago 19 was huge. I don't know if I disagree with this guy, but if you go see Chicago Now live, you're going to be amazed at how great they are.
I love it. All right, Gwen Sunkel writes, world's most overrated band. Chicago sounds like Chardonnay being poured into a Tervis tumbler with the words, it's wine o'clock somewhere, printed on it. And I do want to say Jared Thompson already commented on this.
What did he say?
It can't be if you feel this strongly about Chicago. Gwen also wrote, Jared, this is our first time disagreeing about music. And Jared wrote, it can't be if you feel this strongly about Chicago. It would mean there are many more cracks in your foundation.
Attaboy, Jared. Here's what I'll say to that. Here I am. I'm on a show called, Stand By Your Band, defending Chicago. I think the last thing Chicago is overrated. Like,
yes,
right? Bear. I mean, that's a ridiculous statement. So pour your wine into your gullet and shut it. Although I did like her idea of it's 1 o'clock somewhere. I didn't dislike that turn of phrase, but overrated. Come on. It took them until, 2015 to get in the Rock Hall of Fame. Nobody's thinking of this band. Shut it. Shut your mouth.
They do have to. I mean, it is like, what is it, 50 years they hit at some point recently of being a touring band. That's the craziest thing in the world.
From 1967. Yeah, that's it's bananas. But, enough. I'm sick of hearing about them. They're so damn overrated. All people do is talk about this band. Everywhere I go, Chicago this, Chicago that. Enough.
One thing that's nice about them is how easy it is to Google them. And
hey, you know what? You want to even have more fun, go to setlist.fm to look for setlists by them and just put in Chicago, and then you'll get every band that ever played in Chicago's setlist. It is a, that's rough, man. Or if you're looking for bootleg tapes or t-shirts, put in Chicago, you're screwed. I'm with you, brother.
Fan of the band America, huh?
Oh, you're even worse off.
A lot of these short-sighted ass band names.
Mr. Golden Hair.
Fun is probably the worst one, I think, for this. Fun,
which one?
It's just fun. And period. It's like the worst band name, I think, of all time.
An original name, like Uncle Cracker. That's what I like.
He's coming back.
Incredibly easy to find. And in fact, I think that Follow Me from him is the only one people are going to care to hear because it's the one they're going to find.
Oh, and it's from Uncle Cracker 16, which a lot of people didn't realize.
It's a nice piece of business.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Willie Griswold writes, Second City had a great sketch about Saturday in the Park that shows how weird those lyrics are. 25 or 6 to 4 is a fun song, and I love how they're part of the movie Clear History. Now, I don't know the movie Clear History. Do you fellas?
The Larry David movie.
Oh, yeah. And Chicago was in it.
Okay.
I believe, yeah. Right? Aren't they in it? Yeah.
Willie, you could have given us any explanation of this Saturday in the Park sketch that could have... made it a little more fun. We're not going to do that kind of homework for you, buddy. Matt Alano Martin, co-founder of the Limestone Comedy Festival in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana, says the first album, Chicago Transit Authority, is such a great piece of late 60s, early 70s musical wankery. That seems like backhanded compliment. A double album, exclamation, that's somehow a hippie jam freakout with prog rock ambition and structure while also having pop hooks and harmonies. Interesting.
Yeah. So an album? So a late 60s album? Jesus Christ.
I don't want to just read the negative. So Mike O'Keefe writes, they are fantastic.
Damn right, Mike.
In Chicago at this moment. Who knows better than him? Jason Baldwin writes, I won't say a bad word about Chicago. They were an integral part of the sound of my youth. Brandon Kirkman writes, here's a thought. They friggin' rule, dude. And let's see. Oh, Guy Montgomery, friend of the podcast, writes, they are fantastic. Brandon Ream, I love 80s Cetera era Chicago. One of the best sellout moves ever. Interesting.
You know, the more I'm hearing this, the more I'm going to start agreeing with that woman. They are a little bit overrated. This is too much praise.
Oh, boy.
By the way, if you listen to that CTA album, the one piece of warning I'll give you is there's a track on there called Freeform Guitar, where it's just Terry Kath playing his guitar and getting a bunch of feedback and making noise. I apologize.
That does sound like wankery.
It is.
That fully sounds like wankery.
It really is. It is. When people talk about the genius of Terry Kath and they go, oh, like freeform guitars, like, no, I could do that. That's horrible. It's horrible.
I always preferred ABC Family Guitar myself.
I like to laugh, but I didn't hear a word you said. Somehow it cut out. What did you say?
You know, there's a TV channel called Freeform, firmly known as ABC
you said
Family.
ABC Family? God damn it, that's a good joke. Tommy, oh, Klein was wrong. You do comedy.
Klein was wrong about a lot of things. That's what we've learned today. We got two more comments here.
Okay.
John Hardwick writes, jazz rock or jazz fusion, as Gil and George call it, is hands down my favorite genre of music. And yet, Chicago is one of my least favorite bands ever. Peter Cetera is the worst singer in the history of popular music. If not for him, they might be tolerable. That's a very weird take compared to all the other things we've seen.
How can this guy say that they can barely be tolerable and somebody else says they're overrated? Like, it's bananas.
Our last comment here is from Ben Kim. He writes a song called Street. He says Street Player Rules and was even sampled for this anthemic house tune. And he left a little link to a song from the Bucketheads called The Bomb. So,
yeah. And then Pitbull ended up sampling that song for his. And so and that was written by Danny, the drummer, Street Player. It's off Chicago 13. And Danny Servin is a gazillionaire because of the sampling of this song.
Wow. Because of the Pitbull
turned out all right.
Take on it.
Pitbull did it in that, you know, you know what you want, man. And they just used literally just like that much of the song, but you know, like a Chicago idiot like me go, that's Chicago.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy how it's been. That's their least popular album, but it's probably made them the most money, or at least Danny Servin the most money.
That makes me feel better about him getting ousted.
He's fine. Yeah. Financially, at least I don't know. Maybe he lost everything in 2008. I don't know. I don't know how he's doing.
All right, boys, we are reaching the close of this very podcast. And now comes the ratings of the playlist. We rate the playlist that people give us out of 6 because it is 6 songs. Jimmy, you put so much work into this. I don't see any way we could leave here sleeping well at night without giving this a perfect 6 out of 6. Tommy, what do you think?
4.5. I'm going to go 4.5.
I think that's fair. I think 6 out of 6 seems condescending and patronizing. I think 4.5, if I'm happy with that. I think it's low, but I get it.
You know, I love Dialogue Part 1. Wasn't crazy about Part 2. That's not going to happen.
Interesting that 4.5 seems too low and 6 is patronizing. So there's this tight window in there that it's
very tight like window. Happy with. Yep. You guys would have nailed it with a 5. I would have probably walked away.
We appreciate you coming on so much, Jimmy. Is there anything you want to promote besides Never Not Funny, obviously?
That's it, Never Not Funny. I also do a thing called Jimmy's Records and Tapes, which is over on YouTube, which is at youtube.com/nevernotfunny. And I did 21 episodes, 1975 through 1995, talking about albums from my record collection that then lead to a story from my life. And people seem to like it, you know, not as many as I'd hoped, but a lot of people that like it.
I have a feeling the people that listen to this show will love that. So I hope you guys check that out. Tommy, is there anything you got to promote in this day and age where there are no more stand-up shows?
Yeah, just check out my album, Who's Tommy, on Spotify. And I just want to also echo Tom and say thanks again, Jimmy, so much for coming on. We're huge fans of you, so it meant a lot.
It's my honor. I'm glad you guys finally asked. It's been insulting me that I haven't been asked until this week, until we're at a crunch because there's a pandemic. Oh, see, Pardo got some time. When I heard about this show at Limestone and Jared was telling me about it, I was like, Jesus Christ, that sounds like a great show. I'd love to be a part of it. So I truly, when I got your email, I was very, very excited.
Thanks so much for doing it. We're such huge fans, and what an honor. Guys, check out Never Not Funny, and we'll see you next week. Keep it crispy. Bye.